Teach Me to Code, episode 48. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Teach Me to Code podcast. This is your host, Charles Max Wood, and this week we are talking to David Heinemeier Hansen, who is the creator of Ruby on Rails. But before we get started, I want to recommend our sponsors. We have New Relic. New Relic is one of the best application management tools out there. It identifies trouble spots by capturing response times, breaking down requests, and telling you where slowdowns occur. It tracks errors and exceptions. It does a whole bunch of stuff, and it's a great tool if you need to optimize your website. So go check them out at www.newrelic.com. In fact, they just sent me a new gold membership trial. Let me pull this up real quick. It kind of occurred to me at the last minute here. So I have a new, if you want to try out their gold membership, you can go and use the promotion code CMWGO2102LL. Or you can go to the website and you can click on the link there and it'll take you through and it will use that code for you. Let's see. And then we are also sponsored by me. I am a Ruby on Rails specialist. I do Ruby on Rails applications or anything really related to Ruby. I'm starting to pick up iPhone, so if you need help with any of that stuff, you can give me a call, 801-367-6164. I'm also picking up some programming, training, coaching. I do code reviews. So if you need any help with any of that, I actually have one guy that asked me to make some custom screencasts for him to help him with the concepts that he needs to build an application that he's looking at doing. So, you know, anything like that, go ahead and give me a call, 801-367-6164. You can also follow me on Twitter, cmaxw. And finally, you can leave feedback for the show by calling 801-753-8279. You can also reach me through email, chuck@teachmetocode.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, as I said before, as CMaxW. And finally, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to teachmetocode.com/podcast. And, you know, I just want to thank you for listening. And I'll go ahead and turn the music down here, and we will get to the interview. Hey everybody, this is Charles Max Wood, and we're here today with David Heinemeier Hansen. He's the co-author of Rework and a couple of other books you've probably heard of. He's the original author of the Ruby on Rails framework, which is something that I use every day. And he's also fairly outspoken when it comes to things like entrepreneurship and you know, starting a business. And I also saw on his site that he races race cars, and he's an amateur photographer. Did I miss anything important?
No, I think that sums it up pretty well.
All right, so I'm a little curious, and this is probably something that you've talked about before, but I've always wondered, you know, what made you decide to build a website in Ruby, or to, you know, start working on Ruby on Rails as opposed to using something that was already out there?
Sure. So I had actually used a bunch of what was already out there. When I started with web development, I originally did some work in Microsoft's ASP way back in...
Sorry, everybody, my recorder cut out. Oh, we'll get right back to the interview here. Yeah.
So when I stumbled across Ruby back in, 2003, 4, something like that, it was quite a revelation to me. This was a programming language that just instantly gelled with how I saw the world and how I wanted to program, and thus I figured there's no way I'm going to go back to these other development environments now that I've tasted the sweetness of Ruby. So given that I wanted to work with Ruby, it then came that Ruby didn't have a lot of the things I was used to from PHP or Java, so I had to build those things myself. And all of those things then turned out to be Rails, which was basically my first project in Ruby. I built Rails alongside an application called Basecamp, which is the first application out of 37 Signals. I sort of extracted the framework from there and released it about a year after I first picked up Ruby.
Now, is that what you and Jason Fried were trying to build in the first place, or were you working on something else?
We were trying to build Basecamp. Okay. I was not trying to build Rails at all. I was just trying to put together the tools that I needed to build Basecamp. Rails didn't really become an idea until perhaps halfway through the development of Basecamp itself, when I realized that I had assembled a toolbox that was really helpful for me in developing Basecamp and that others might want to use as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, I'm a little curious, do you still at 37 Signals have that kind of freedom for your developers where they can kind of go out and you know, do kind of what you did and kind of build your own framework? Or do you encourage them to work in different ways?
So the bulk of the work that we do is on existing applications that we already have, and all those applications are written in Ruby and Rails. And if there's something that we do that is just a vanilla web application, we will build it in Ruby and Rails. We keep adding things to the Rails framework that come out of that development experience, but we've actually also done a bunch of work on JavaScript. A variety of projects that we have use JavaScript in large extents, and a bunch of frameworks have come out of that. Out of the 37 Signals troop, we've had Capistrano, the deployment framework, came out of work that James Buck did for us on deployment to servers once we started getting a bunch of them. Prototype was something Sam Stevenson developed as a JavaScript framework when we started doing a bunch of JavaScript stuff for our own needs. And we've had a bunch of frameworks like that have spun off the development that that we're doing on all these applications. So it's still absolutely up for grabs that people can come up with something new as soon as we have a new problem or something new that we run into and work on a framework and spin it out and make it open source.
All right. Yeah, and that, you know, I think a lot of people use things that you at 37 Signals have built and, you know, really appreciate some of the simplicity that's there. I know that, you know, I actually went to school. I took a whole bunch of programming classes and decided that it wasn't for me. You know, programming was, you know, kind of boring and, you know, there really wasn't a whole lot of point to it. And then when I graduated and was working in a department that I was running for my, you know, for the company I was working for, you know, I started building a system that we needed because I could program and, you know, the company was using Ruby on Rails for their web portions of their application. And, you know, it turned out that, hey, programming wasn't so dumb. So, you know, it's what got me back into programming. And so I you know, I really appreciate the work that you and others have put into the framework.
Thanks. I think that's how I got into programming myself. Once you need a program, there's no better motivation than that to learn a new environment and learn a new development platform. That's why I picked up Ruby. I picked up Ruby because I wanted to build Basecamp. I built Rails because I wanted things to build Basecamp. So I think that fundamental need of wanting a program or web application or whatever you want to call it is just a great way to motivate you to learn something new and figure out that, hey, maybe you'll end up actually liking it too.
Now, I'm a little curious, with Rails, you kind of got a community with it over the years, and you've kind of been put out there, you know, whether you wanted to be or not, as a community leader. How do you handle all of that?
So I think the wonderful thing about Rails is that it's a commons in the sense that we all bring our own solutions to our own problems to the table, and then we combine them into a grander package. So I continue to work on the things that I care about, the problems that I face in my day-to-day work and the general design ideas that I just have an opinion on. And other people do the same. So they will bring their solutions, their fixes, their patches, their improvements or bug resolutions that they've encountered to the table. And it really is pretty easy like that. When you have that common goal and the common vision for what the project should be, we're just all working towards that. So I continue to be involved with the community in that sense. But it's not like, I mean, this is a huge community. I don't need to keep a tabs on what everybody's doing at all time to feel like I'm a part of it or have influence on it. So there are tons of people out there working on their own improvements to Rails or engines or plugins or extensions of various kinds that can do that without having to get permission from me or from anybody else for that matter. And can just do it on their own. And that's the wonderful part and why this is able to scale like it is.
Yeah. And, you know, the community really is great. And, you know, I think you kind of have the right approach there where, you know, you expect people to bring what they have to offer and make the community what it is. Now, we don't have a ton of time, so I'm going to kind of move through topics rather quickly. One other thing that I've noticed, and this is something that I'm rather interested in myself, is entrepreneurship. It sounds like Jason kind of brought you into the company as a developer, and then you've moved into kind of a partner role since then. What suggestions do you have for people who are, you know, either looking at starting a company or, you know, are being brought in as kind of the technical expertise, you know, and may find themselves in that position later on?
Sure. So I think in terms of starting a company, it's never been easier. It's never been cheaper to get something set up, to buy server space somewhere, to find a niche that you think is underserved and you think you can do better. We started all of our business applications from our own needs, from things that we didn't like the solutions that were already out there for. So I think that's a great path. It's still absolutely there. If you're going to join somebody else's enterprise, I think there's sort of a couple of ways to do it. You can certainly join just as an early developer, an early tech person that helps out with the tech. And oftentimes that will sort of give you some sense of equity. For me, it was just as much about joining it from the business perspective. Tech was my specialty in terms of skills, just like Jason's specialty in terms of skills is design. But we both brought a deep interest in running and growing a business to it. So I don't think there's a whole lot of sort of startups that are going to make the technical guy an outright partner in the operation if, in quote, all they bring to the table is programming power. I mean, that doesn't usually work that way. But if you're a programmer who have that as a skill, I think that's a great start. I don't believe generally in starting new companies with people who don't have some sort of fundamental skill that is useful in the beginning of the company's creation. So if all you do is just bring business knowledge to it, it's really not that helpful. Some people can get around that by also bringing money to the table, but I'd say it's more rewarding when you're working with people who have an actual skill that's going to move the product or service forward. So yeah, it's sort of a roundabout way of getting to your question, but.
No, it really makes sense. I mean, you know, the two things that I think startups really need when they get going are talent, good talent, and money. And so, you know, if you can bring one of those two things, and ultimately in the long run the talent is what's going to pay off, you know, then yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. Now, I am a little curious because, you know, there seem to be two camps. You know, you either get VC funding, you know, and you get off the ground that way, or you kind of bootstrap it yourself, you find your own customers and you work it out that way. Most of what I've seen and read seems to indicate to me that you would fall more in the camp of, you know, don't raise the money, just, you know, build the app and find the customers. And I could be wrong about that, but is that your approach? And, you know, what do you recommend as far as finding customers and building your business model?
Sure. So I think that it's generally a more satisfying experience when you're building something from scratch that you're funding off customers. And I think that that's possible today in ways it was never possible before, because of the things we talked about earlier with how cheap it is to get started, how few infrastructure level costs that you have. The key ingredient to starting a tech business today is time and talent. So if you have both of those things, what is it exactly that you need from somebody else? So that's not to say that the venture capital money or angel money or whatever you want to call it is never a good idea. I think it's just, it's overrated as an approach. And I think it's a shame that it's currently treated by large extent as a default approach. Like, this is how you start a tech business. Get other people's money and then spend that for a long time, and then maybe what you're working on will turn out to be a success. I just see that as a roundabout way for a lot of tech businesses that do not have big capital needs. It's not like they're buying factories or actually building physical goods that require huge capital expenditures. Most of them, it's just about people. It's just about people spending time. So it just seems there's so many downfalls that come with the whole VC money route that it would seem obvious to me that you would want to avoid that at all costs unless you absolutely positively had to. And it just seems that there's tons of companies being founded with VC money that don't absolutely positively have to take it. So that just seems like a sort of a bit of a distraction. And I would encourage anybody to try the other way first. This is especially true if you're not based in a VC hub. If you're not in Silicon Valley, San Francisco, Bay Area, you're going to have a harder time attracting VC money anyway. Most of them want you to move out there as to be part of this sort of community or whatever you want to call it out there. If you are, as we were, just sitting in Chicago somewhere with a good idea for a product or a service, you're in some ways forced to just do it on your own, which I think is a good thing. I mean, we had constraints, massive constraints at the beginning. Basecamp was built with the part-time work of three people over the course of 6 months or so. And we slowly grew it into the multi-million dollar business it is today. And it certainly didn't happen overnight. It took more than a year before we were even self-sustainable, that Basecamp could pay for all the bills. So, but now we're sitting in a position where we have absolute freedom. We don't have anybody breathing down our neck to either sell the company or take it public or do anything except run a great software company. And it kind of depends on your motivation here. We're in it to run a great software company for the next 20 years. We're not in it to do a quick flip and retire to Mojito Island somewhere. And if that's what you're in it for, then maybe the VC approach is the right way to go. I don't think that that generally leads to something as ephemeral as happiness in this entrepreneurial game. And I think a lot of people are realizing that after the fact, that now they've sold their company or died trying, and it's like, are they any happier for it? I think a lot of people would trade after the fact. So we like the position we're in. We're telling other people that this is absolutely a viable alternative to the standard thinking of the Valley that has you raising a bunch of money and then going that whole path and trying to get bought somewhere. So we're just offering an alternative voice here and giving people a chance to believe that there's an alternative path.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, and I think a lot of people appreciate it. And I think a lot of people also in general agree with some of the things that you point out as far as like business valuations and things like that. Now I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit. again, and I'm a little curious, how much time do you spend coding now versus, you know, before when things were just getting going?
Not nearly enough. I used to program for hours on end every day. Now I don't get that luxury most of the time. It certainly takes a lot of time just to run a business of what, 23 people or whatever we are right now, and to manage the millions of users we have across all our applications. So I actually miss I miss programming more. I still get to do it. I was just working on some stuff yesterday, and I still absolutely love it. I wish I could find more ways to hack my schedule in such a way to make more time for it. So it's certainly not something I would ever want to give up. There's just an intrinsic, rewarding feedback loop that comes from programming that's very, very hard to reproduce in any sorts of other activity. So it's just a joy in itself to work in to work with the materials like it is to work with programming, especially when you love the tools and the language as much as I love working with Ruby on Rails.
All right. Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when you get to a certain point, people do start to approach you, you know, for different things. And or at least in my case, I've had a few people approach me about, you know, management positions and things. And, you know, I have the same dilemma. It's like, well, how much programming is involved? Because that's really what I enjoy. And so I can definitely relate to what you're saying. I'm a little curious also, do you spend more time programming or racing cars?
I certainly spend more time programming, but lately my hobby interests outside of work and sitting in front of a computer have certainly taken up a fair amount of time, and I enjoy the sort of diversity of having other hobbies that don't just include programming. I think there's a really healthy life balance to be had when you're not single tracked on something. It's fine to be single tracked on things for a while. I was certainly single tracked on developing Rails and the applications early on. But even then, it wasn't like, hey, let's sit down and work 80 hours a week. I never thought that was a healthy path, even though there's all this mythology and entrepreneurship about how you have to work your heart out. I never believed that to be true, and it certainly didn't turn out to be true for us. We didn't work our heart out, and we still managed to get where we are today. So this is just an extension of that. If I can work 30, 40 hours a week, do a little bit of programming on the side and do a little bit of racing on the side and generally just enjoy myself and have that balance between a number of different interests, I think that that's something I could continue doing on for the rest of my life. Then you don't have sort of that desire, that need to, oh, if I could just retire, then I could pursue all my dreams or my interests. You can pursue them right now. Why are you trying to set up this false idol of deferred living where, I work everything I can right now and I forgo all other interests and all other passions, and then something magical will happen in 5 years from now. Maybe I'll get bought and I'll have millions to do what I really want to do. What if you just do what you really want to do today? It's probably not as hard or as impossible as you would think it is.
Yeah, and honestly, I think the people who are coding for those reasons, you know, or, you know, go out and do the other things that they enjoy along with, you know, programming and all and whatever else their hobby or interests are, you know, I think those people make better coders. You know, they do better. They, you know, they excel in whatever it is they're doing, and it is because they enjoy it. Now, I have one more question because I know that time's a little bit tight. And that is, in your mind, what makes a great developer? What are the qualities or attributes you look for either in someone you hire or just, you know, people who are members of the community that you admire?
I think just great code. I've been reading through a bunch of applications lately for open positions we have for programmers, and there's just no beating around the bush that the code has to be good. And it's surprisingly evident when you look at somebody's code, whether whether you feel like you're on the same wavelength. So I can look at a piece of code or an application somebody has written and pretty quickly see whether they care about the things that I find to be important and thus would be a good fit for our company, or they don't. So that passion for the code itself, the care about the aesthetics of the code, just having it nice and neat and sort of short methods, nicely formatted, great naming, all those things that I consider to be important are really clear early on. But then that's sort of, that has to be there. We're not going to hire anybody who doesn't have that baseline of just writing great code. But on top of that, I think that it's really important just that it's a person you'd want to work with. It doesn't help you anything if you have the greatest coder in the world if he's an asshole. Like, who's going to want to work next to an asshole? Nobody. So programming in many regards is a team sport, and it's certainly a team sport at 37 Signals. So we just try to find people that do great code and would fit in great with the rest of the culture of the company.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast. I don't want to keep you any longer. I've already kept you longer than you allotted for this, but thanks for coming on and offering your insight and expertise on these topics. And, hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Sure. My pleasure. Take care.
Bye. Yep. Bye. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. That was a great interview. David only had a few minutes, and so I really appreciate him taking the time to talk to me from out in California. So, just thanks again. If you want to check him out, you can go to loudthinking.com, or you can look at the company that he is a partner in at 37 Signals, 37signals.com. And, they do some awesome stuff. I think they have their own podcast, and, they talk about entrepreneurship and technology and things like that. So, I highly recommend you go check them out. And, while you're at it, go leave some feedback for the show in iTunes. And, if you need to get a hold of me for any of the things I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you can call me at 801-367-6164 or email me, chuck@teachmetocode.com. And finally, I just want to have you all keep in mind that writing the code is the easy part.